Serene once again has done just such a beautiful job of framing the issues and bringing us into a very personal space where trauma and healing potentially can occur. In a briefer time, I just want to talk a little bit about the issues I've struggled with, thinking about healing with respect to the 9/11 tragedy, because in the end, this is why we're here. We're not talking about healing in general, but healing about the 9/11 tragedy. And so many of the examples of healing that I can think of, that I draw upon as resources from the Islamic tradition, involve situations where the perpetrator of the harm or the violence is known, and the victims of the injustice have some opportunity to either take revenge, to get justice, to teach a lesson, or to reconcile with the perpetrators. Now, most of the people who were involved in the 9/11 attacks were killed, died along with their victims. Of course, Osama bin Laden was still at large, and we kept looking for him until he was killed. And maybe we can talk a little bit more about what that meant to us. But let's think about what it means first when the perpetrators are still present, when we speak about a major societal trauma, as 9/11 was. And when I think about the example that I gave in the readings of the Prophet Muhammad and the early Muslim community being able to return to Mecca, where those who had oppressed them and tormented them and exiled them from the city and continued to harass them and wage war on them, what was that reconciliation that eventually ensued? How was that possible? It was made possible by, first of all, even in the conflict, making sure that the means that were used to defend themselves, to resist further oppression, were within a certain boundary that did not make it impossible to later reconcile. And we spoke about this the other week when I mentioned the prohibition on mutilation of the bodies of the enemy, that part of that prohibition made it possible to both for the Muslims themselves and their opponents recognize a mutual humanity and dignity in the bodies, even in the midst of warfare. And I think without that, there may be some doors for reconciliation that would have been closed because the trauma, the further trauma of that, may have been too intense. And then there was this hope, a persistent hope that reconciliation would be possible, even in the most difficult times. And so the verse that I give from the Quran, it may be that those whom you now consider enemies will one day be beloved to you. So this act of an imagination, which seems an impossibility in the moment, that these enemies may be, in the some future, your beloved brothers. It's almost like a vision statement, you know, and then how do you work towards that? So what I'm saying is that healing is a process that needs to begin even in the midst of mourning. We have to set up the possibility for healing even in the way that we mourn and even in the way that we seek justice. I think about the Quranic story of Joseph. For those of you who haven't read the Quran, the story of Joseph as narrated in the Quran is really one of the most beautiful parts of the Quran. About Joseph being betrayed by his brothers, being discarded by them, being picked up and sold, carried to a foreign land, adopted by those foreigners who gave him a completely new identity. Then in that new home, being falsely accused of trying to seduce the woman of the house, being imprisoned, but then leaving jail because of his ability to interpret dreams. He saves the people of Egypt from famine, and in his new context, encounters his brothers who come to Egypt to trade, but they don't recognize him in his new life. They're speaking to him face to face, and they do not know that this is their brother. He tricks his brothers into thinking that the younger brother has stolen something, and now they must leave the younger brother in his custody. Eventually, they have a realization. By repeating the action to the younger brother that mirrored the action of injustice that they did to Joseph, now they come to realize what they had done, and they, in that realization, also now recognize Joseph. They're forgiven by Joseph, and there's a reconciliation. Now, this is a very moving story with a tidy ending. And again, it doesn't fit with this kind of massive trauma that we have in 9/11. And I think part of the struggle that we've had in the wake of 9/11 is the struggle with understanding who were the perpetrators of the violence. Who were they? We know there were the terrorists themselves who died in the plane. We know about Osama bin Laden, who later was caught. But we felt that it was so massive that there had to be something more. There had to be something more, and how could we heal if we couldn't find a partner to, you know, apologize to us, or that we can bring and feel a satisfaction with serving justice upon them? It makes me understand, I think, a little bit this persistent question that many in the American Muslim community have gotten for the last decade. This constant question, why do Muslims not speak out against terrorism? Why do we not hear Muslims talking about these horrors? And I thought that it was only really a question of communications. You know, this is how I understood it. I thought, you know, we remember bad news more than good news. Even though Muslims have been very vocal in denouncing violence, terrorism in the name of Islam, it's not being heard in the same way that when you watch the evening news, the bad stories stick with you and the good ones fade away. It has to do something with the way we process information, especially threats. But I'm starting to think that kind of beneath the question was almost a desire for an apology from us for what happened, because when it was such a major societal trauma, there was a need, and I think there remains a need for a kind of equal partner in that, for the oppressor, the perpetrator of violence, to somehow reflect that social structure, that breadth, And in a way, we were, and we have been, the kind of, you know, proxy, maybe. And I think that it's very difficult for healing to continue or to occur on a societal level until we realize that. And it's one of the reasons why I personally felt a lot of sympathy for those people who expressed not only relief that Osama bin Laden was killed. I understood that very well. I think many of us did. But also a sense of joy and a need to celebrate it. I wasn't as critical as people who felt that way, because I felt that there was, for a long time, you know, Serene talks about this trauma kind of circulating. I felt that there wasn't a place for it to go. And now, finally, in this larger-than-life character, there was a place to put that. And I even felt that somehow a relief of the pressure from my community to now be in the position of even unconsciously, you know, apologizing for what happened. We didn't do it, and now it was kind of understood, because here was the person, very clearly no longer a myth, who had done it. But let me just say, when we look at 9/11, what can I learn from these stories that I've related that might help us in this area? One of the things that I see in the Joseph story is that he became a new person. I mean, he became such a different person. You know, he was transported to a different land. He had a new name, a new identity, new relationships, to the point where his own family couldn't recognize him. Although, of course, he kept his values, which is why he landed in prison in the first place, or in the second place, let's say. But what is it about trauma and then healing that leads to a certain kind of growth that in some cases may be distorted? It may be a misshapen growth. It may be a healing over or a scar, but also the possibility for something new. And I think we are all transformed by trauma. We're never going to regain our past selves, ever. We can't go back and be the people we were before it happened. And, you know, the people who died are dead. Now, from a theological perspective, I don't believe it's Pollyannish to believe that they have a new life with God. I believe that is a dignification of their life. And the ultimate, you know, judgment of them, that those who died innocently are not the same as those who died committing evil. They're not the same in their deaths. There's a value judgment there, and that's why in my tradition you not only need to believe in God, but you need to believe in the final judgment, that what we do affects forever, for eternity, who we are. If you die committing evil and perpetuating evil, you are in a different state than one who dies innocently at the hands of an evil person. But for those who remain, that is, can give some comfort, but it doesn't heal the wounds. It doesn't heal the gaping space in your life. But in this space, what happens? And I think this idea of life continuing or moving on, it's not so much moving on as this new kind of growth. We see that in his suffering, Joseph became a new person through service to others who weren't his people. The Egyptians were not his people. He'd not particularly benefited that much from them, But he saved them. Can you imagine what 7 years of famine would do, especially to children, those who are developing physically and mentally? 7 years of malnutrition. Those who wouldn't die would be stunted in their bodies and their minds. His willingness and desire to save those people meant that there was a certain kind of trauma that at least wouldn't continue in that next generation. I think of the 10 years that we've spent since 9/11, 2001, and I think of the ways that we've tried to prevent trauma from being passed on to the young people, and in other ways where maybe we haven't done such a good job. But if we're talking about societal healing, how can we talk about society without looking at the way in which we may be passing down our wounds onto others? What would make this society look different than it does now, 30 years from now, either better or worse? And, you know, in the end, unless we pay attention to that and find a way to become new people, recognizing that we are different people because of what has happened, and we learn to fill that new space and grow in ways that will impact the others in a positive way, then I think it will be a greater tragedy.